Hello and welcome to Wise Women, The Vicar and the Witch. I'm Maggie Whitehouse and I'm the Vicar.
And I'm Susie Crockford and I'm the Witch. We are perceived, perhaps, as being on opposite ends of a spectrum, but we're friends and we see the common threads of our different experience of the sacred. So please join us as we discuss
life, the universe and everything. Hello again and welcome. And I pretty much hogged the last one with the Ten Commandments, so I think it's definitely your turn. And it's great because I want to ask you about the journeying work you do. And can you describe it to us? You've talked about it very, very briefly, but having experienced it with you, I'd just love to know more. Where do you take us?
Okay, so I don't personally take you anywhere. You're the intention of the journeyer. In partnership with the spirits is the kind of, oh, and in partnership obviously with the drum. So the drum, it's been investigated by science. Gosh, as usual, so many things trying to come out of my mouth at once that I'm going, anyway, so the drum, science investigated the drum and discovered that if you beat the drum between, I believe it's 4.7 and 7.2 beats per second, something like that, so approximately 300 BPM, which is pretty fast, you change the state of a human brain. And you change us out of alpha awake, not into a sleep, but into that betwixt and between state, which we actually pass through each day on our way in and out of sleep, if we're lucky enough to get any sleep. And that is the visionary state. And that is the state which, if you combine it with clear intention, you can step into non-ordinary reality. So that place that's in nearly every culture described as being kind of behind some sort of veil, the other world, that place where spirits dwell and where there is no ego because there are no bodies. So the place where matter doesn't exist in the physical way that we think of and describe when we use the word physics. But who's to say that it doesn't exist? I mean, you know, it's very easy to go, oh, well, it doesn't exist. And you know, there'll be plenty of people, probably not the ones listening, but plenty who would dismiss it as a kind of fantasy place or an internal place or whatever. But what's extraordinary about it is that there is so much congruence in the descriptions of those who visit these places. And I say, I'm sure you may have noticed, the more observant, that I'm mixing up between place and places, because on the one hand, it is one place, it is the other world. But on the other hand, there are clearly many, many, many locations in the other world, and there are, in some ways, three destinations for clarity's sake. So the other world, particularly in shamanism, is seen as being a three-layered place, which can be very clearly metaphorically described by the figure of a tree. So there is the middle world, which would be equivalent to the trunk of the tree, the lower world, which would be equivalent to the roots of the tree, and the upper world, which would be equivalent to the branches of the tree. And they are, in one sense, they are three different places, but they are no more three different places than the upstairs, the downstairs, and the basement of a house. You know, you wouldn't say you're going somewhere different, but equally you clearly access those places by going up or
and they
out
have a different purpose.
And they have a different purpose and a different flavour, and yeah, much like the upstairs and the basement and the middle bit of your house. And what's seen is that in the lower world, spirits, wise, compassionate, utterly loving, all-knowing beings will tend to present themselves, remembering that there is no matter, so they can present themselves any way they choose. They're not bounded by what we think we understand by physics. And that they will present themselves in ways which help us to understand. So constantly they're offering us a metaphor through every aspect of what we experience when we go to the lower world about what's in the lower world. So the primary thing in the lower world is what's known variously as our power animal, our totem animal. There's probably more expressions for it for that, but I think most people would understand the term power animal. And that our power animal is an expression of our power through the metaphor of the shape of an animal. Mm-hmm. And it's in the metaphor, you go to the lower world and you meet an animal, and that's will become a totally beloved, wise and trusted ally. And in the metaphor, it's kind of separate because you have to go over there. But actually, your power animal is literally an expression of your power, and it is part of you, but it is the spirit part of you, the soul part of you, that can be metaphorically expressed in this way, which means that it's yours, it's connected to you. If it wasn't connected to you, you'd be terribly ill straight away. But it's not connected or filtered through your ego. So it is wise, compassionate, utterly loving, all-knowing aspect of you, which, because of our ego and because of the rampaging tales that that inspector part of our ego tends to tell us, it's brings much more clarity and the potential for far more wisdom if we can kind of see it as over there and separate and someone else, because certainly in the West we're much more likely to listen to the wisdom of an over there separate, wise, compassionate, all-knowing, all-loving spirit than we are to listen to a facet perhaps of ourself, but one that's wise, all-knowing, all-loving, etc. And then so in the upper world there is the same. There's a wise, utterly loving, all-knowing, compassionate, wonderful spirit who's there uniquely for us in exactly the same way that our power animal is there uniquely for us. And they are remarkably like what you lot call an angel. I mean, typically the metaphor is of a human-ish being who very, very, very often has wings, very, very, very often radiates light, and is there in the way that Christianity says our guardian angel is there, to guide us and to you know, be that extraordinary source of wisdom and love and the potential for healing that that a spirit can be that isn't attached to ego. So that's the upper world and the lower world. And we exist also, we are microcosm of the macrocosm in the upper world and the lower world, in that we've got a guardian angel in the branches of the tree, we've got a power animal in the roots of the tree, and then in the middle of the tree, there's us, there's all the spirits of ordinary reality. So there's also, therefore, ego. And so in ordinary reality, in the middle world, we need to be careful. And therefore, in the middle world, for us, in the tree that's us, is a body protector, because we wouldn't go out into the middle world to engage with all that is in the middle world, simply because it's not all wise, compassionate, utterly loving, all-knowing.
Okay, that's lovely. So we've got these three aspects, which, of course, if I bring it back to Christianity, would be the Trinitarian aspects. The idea there's a dance of three, mm-hmm. because if you have two, there can be opposition. But if there's three, there's always movement, mm-hmm. which would create a fourth. And what I've always found, I don't know if you would agree with this, is when one is genuinely in touch with spirit, whether it's the power animal aspect or the angelic aspect, it's usually unexpected.
Well, with journeying, that's absolutely not the case. Oh. Well, it depends what you mean. I mean, because, well, it does depend what you mean by that. So journeying's not unexpected, because journeying's a deliberate act. You with that marvellous, you know, powerful trinity, again, of ourselves, will, yes. and imagination, we can go to non-ordinary reality, we can meet with our allies in non-ordinary reality, in the upper world, in the lower world, in the other world, in the middle world, and ask them for wisdom. So from that perspective, it's not unexpected. But actually, when I'm teaching people to journey, I've even now taken that to telling them before they even go on their first journey that at some point, before the day is out, they will say the words, "I didn't expect that." Because spirits, in order to journey, we have to behave as if we already trusted the spirits. You can't step into non-ordinary reality and learn to trust the spirits unless you're prepared to risk trusting the spirits. And it's one of those crazy things where you won't find the trust. They can't prove it to you unless you're prepared to act as if you already trusted. And so, therefore, you can go out on your first journey very much going, well, you know, this woman's basically telling me to make it up. What on earth chance is that got of offering me any wisdom or anything other than an irritating feeling like I just made up a silly adventure kind of thing? But at some point in that first day, that meeting of what I've created with my imagination coming to be met in beautiful 50-50 partnership by the spirits will result in something that is apparently arising in this visualization through imagination that's so unexpected that you have to go, oh, okay, well, I clearly didn't make that up, because if I was going to make something up, it wouldn't have been that. And that's, yes, so yes, from that perspective, absolutely, tremendously, gloriously unexpected.
Oh, that's beautifully explained. Thank you. I absolutely get both the aspects of that, and it's so true. When you taught me how to journey, I went down into caves, right down underground, which is appropriate for my Scorpio moon astrology, right down into underwater rivers, dark and light and all that. And the creature that was my animal guide was an owl, which was the last thing you'd expect right down under the ground in a cave. So that's what I meant by unexpected.
Yeah.
And when I went up, I got the Little Prince on the Moon.
Oh, I remember that. Oh,
and
my goodness.
I only ever read that book once in my life. So that was completely unexpected that would come out. But it worked so beautifully because you could say to the ego, that didn't come from us.
Yeah. Yeah.
Neither of them came from us.
No.
My bishop actually told me off because I told him about it and I gave the owl a name. He said, you never name your power animal. But that's just a different tradition. And I thought, yes. I'm very proud that my bishop even knows what a power animal is.
Yes. Excellent. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yes, so that kind of aspect of surprising is, oh, so exquisitely part of the journey towards trust. Because, you know, spirit, our power animal, our upper world tutelary spirit, which is the kind of core shamanism correct term for what I must admit I have come to call a guardian angel, having been for at least 20 years incredibly resistant to using the words guardian angel. I was just like, no, that belongs to Christianity, bah! But actually, it's a very clear way of explaining how this figure feels and behaves, which most people don't have a problem with. But I do invite people to make their own name. Anyway, I digress. That they've been there all along. You know, we don't suddenly have a power animal just because we went to meet them. They've always been there. And so, again, a kind of surprising thing is that they've always been there and yet somehow or other we haven't met them is sort of like suddenly realising, oh my goodness, all this time I've been living in a house right next door to Frida Kahlo or Gandhi or whoever, and somehow or other I've failed miserably to meet them. And so the wishing of it, the knowing it's there, that's actually not going to make that much difference to whether or not you meet Frida Kahlo or Gandhi or whoever it is lives next door. But the willing of it, the will, when you put will in this mixture of wanting to go to meet the spirits, of wanting to journey to meet the spirits, is we don't wish ourselves to the dentist. we will it. Mm. We go, oh, my tooth hurts. Okay, I phone the dentist. I turn up at the appointed hour. And journeying is exactly the same. We make an appointment. We put our will in the mix. We know the route. There's a tree. If I want to go to the lower world, I'm going to go down through the roots of that tree, which is my access. So each one of us has our own unique access to these worlds, which typically and cross-culturally is a tree, but it doesn't have to be a tree. And my will to do that, along with my willingness to use my imagination as a creative tool, so to see myself at a tree that I know and love, to see myself going down, and then to be open to the idea that when I arrive at wherever down is, that maybe there will be a creature to meet me, but that if I don't, I'm not going to just sit there going, well, I'm waiting, that I'm going to will myself to explore this place. And if I'm really getting to the point where, well, there's no one here, I'm going to imagine someone to whom I can then say, please, will you take me to my power animal? And so you can really see how that would be ever so easy to dismiss.
Yes.
And yet our willingness to employ our imagination, our time, our intention in this way puts up a massive sign in the other world going to the spirits. Hey, she really wants to meet us. She's coming. Because they're only really interested in 50-50 partnership. And so they will offer us back exactly as much as we are prepared to put in. And hence my emphasis constantly on clarity. Because if we're going with clarity, we know why, we know what for, we know where, what question it is we'd like the answer to, and why we're asking that question, we're going to get incredible clarity back. And if we're bubbling about going, oh, I think I might go and meet a spirit, ooh, ho hum, I wonder where, I wonder what, we're going to get bubbly wubbly, not much.
Mm. I completely relate to this. When I have people coming to me saying, but I don't know how to contact my guardian angel, or have I got any guidance or anything like that, what I will say to them, and this just came to me, so it's the same thing, you have to be willing to trust it.
Yeah.
And that's why if I do see something or I sense something, I will act on it, even if I look an absolute prat. Because even if I'd rather look an absolute prat and have got it wrong than to have ignored something that's coming through, which is yes. And it's so when people are not able to contact them, I have always said, who is the human being from history or wherever that you have always really, really, really admired?
Mm.
And if you like, project onto them or put the shell of their body there and ask spirit to fill it so that you can imagine Winston Churchill or Frida Kahlo or whoever you want, depending on where you're going or what you want to do with your life. I started off with Esther from the Bible, for example.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But she started out as Esther the way you would have thought she was in the Bible, but Spirit was able to change it. Because yes. Once I'd created a vessel, Spirit was then able to meld and move around with it.
Absolutely.
And that was the real secret of it, to say, just create the vessel.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And hilariously, actually, in whatever it is, 2 decades of teaching people to journey, I do find it so funny. I love it. When I started teaching people to journey, the vessel that was typically created in the upper world, or, you know, the one that stepped forward, even to people who were absolutely confident that they weren't making this up, this was who was coming towards them. 9 out of 10 cats had a Native American Indian step forwards. Mm. Because at that time, our typical cultural story was that we'd lost all our wisdoms.
Yeah.
And that the Native American peoples were the only ones who had an intact spiritual lineage that could offer wisdom.
Mm.
So therefore, if I'm going to be able to trust my upper world guide to be wise, they better be a Native American Indian.
Yeah.
Following the release of the Lord of the Rings, we remembered, good grief, Gandalf. He's kind of one of us. He comes from here. He's, you know, our story. I mean, you know, okay, it was filmed in New Zealand, but it was written here. oh yeah, we had wise old geezers and wise old birds, and we've got druids, and not that he's ever named as a druid, but oh yes, we had a tradition once. And now the number of times where the description is basically of Gandalf, you know, it's a wise old person with a staff and a long grey or brown dress or whatever. And that's been such a change. And exactly that. Once they've got their kind of very almost commonplace metaphorical being, over the course of sometimes very few journeys indeed, that being will slowly morph into a creature who is clearly far more personal to them than just a Native American or a Gandalf-y type figure or, you know, an old witch, whatever. That they become very uniquely, usually, this is my guide. But they tend to start out as a very broad brushstrokes version of wisdom. But of course, because, you know, what the whole point of this is for the spirits to transmit to us through metaphor as much information as they can. And if I'm trying to transmit to you as a spirit, I'm wise, compassionate, all-knowing, utterly loving, you can completely trust me and I won't let you down, then looking like Gandalf's a pretty obvious choice.
Sounds brilliant to me. And it's very different from this practice that a lot of us have when we're starting out in spirituality of looking for signs. And I found out through many years that if you look for signs, you're going to see signs.
Totally.
So signs cannot be trusted in that respect, because the way the ego is actually wired, apparently the way the brain works is that our ego decides what we see.
Yeah.
Because everything has to be filtered. It's a natural and very clever thing, because otherwise we would be able to focus on everything in a room exactly the same frequency and strength. So we'd never be able to focus down on one human being or one thing, because everything would be speaking to you at the same level. So yeah, the ego is designed to say we can focus down.
I absolutely fundamentally disagree with,
oh, go on.
Oh, this is with fabulous. The idea that you can't trust signs. I think you can't trust your ego to interpret random signs, but yes, you totally can trust an intention that life with capital L will give you a sign. And so you can go on what I call an omen walk, which is, again, find your clarity, find your question, take it out with you into nature and ask nature to give you an answer. And then in which case the flight of the sparrows or the exquisiteness of the rose you've never seen before or whatever it is becomes the omen that leads you to the answer. And then you absolutely can trust signs.
Absolutely, yes. Oh, and I love this because it clarifies the language. Mm-hmm. And I totally agree with that. The signs I'm talking about are the ones where the easiest story I can give you on this is that your ego will look for what you want it to see or what it wants to see. Mm. So there are some signs you can't trust, but I totally agree with you on the ones that you'd see on a walk like that. But when I fell in love with my ex and he fell in love with me, I was driving a red Citroen.
Mm-hmm.
He saw red Citroens everywhere,
mm-hmm,
because he was looking for me. There were no more red Citroens, but he was starting to say, oh, I know it's you because I keep seeing these red Citroens. But that wasn't a sign. That was just his programming looking for me. Does that make sense?
Not quite, but I think I nearly... had he already met you before he saw,
oh,
red,
yes,
Citroen?
He knew I drove a red,
oh,
Citroen.
Oh, right. Oh, yeah, but yeah, that's... Yes, indeed. And that's a great illustration of how much it is we don't see unless we're noticing it.
Yes.
And yes, there were no more red Citroens. That's hilarious. What sort of red Citroen? I used to drive a red 2CB.
Yeah, it was a 2CV.
Yay! Yeah,
no, it wasn't a 2CV. Sorry, it was bigger than that.
A Diane?
No. It was one of the big ones with the arch wheels that sank down when you...
It
belonged to my late husband, and I drove it after he died for quite some time and then sold it. But so it's signs need to be coming out of the blue, I think. You say, I'm going on a walk and I need some signs. But would you say, I'll see a peacock butterfly and that'll be yes? Or do you just wait for the universe
You can do either. Mm. It depends how much you're prepared to trust and how expansive you're prepared to allow the answer to be.
Yeah.
But you can, there's the shred left of a practice of divination by natural omens left in one for sorrow, two for joy, three for a wedding, four for a boy.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can decide, well, I'm going to go out and I'm going to be answered by the magpies.
Mm.
Or you can say, well, I'm going to go out and I'm going to be answered. And it could be the most random thing. But if you're in that place of conversation with the land, then something which is perhaps utterly inexplicable to somebody else will answer you. You know, it's not overt that that's clearly an answer. If you said to somebody, well, I asked this question and then I saw a squirrel, and they might go, okay, and did you get your answer? But, you know, it depending on what your story is around squirrels, or even just depending on the moment, you can feel like you have clearly received the answer.
Mm.
And so, for example, for me, through a process much like that, every time I see a squirrel, I feel as if life is asking me, are you resourced? Have you got your squirrely little stash? And whenever I really notice a squirrel, you know, that there's definitely a difference between kind of just randomly seeing a squirrel and noticing a squirrel. I feel like the land is saying to me, are you resourced? And it became and continues to be a very important question for me as somebody whose capacity to overwork herself is, well, it's a Western sickness, isn't it? That we feel we've got to work all the time.
Oh, good.
And squirrel pops up all over the place going, chill out, Susie, go get some acorns and put them in your, you know, little stash.
Yeah.
We
all do have these personal signs. And mine is the peacock butterfly, and that started many years ago when I'd written my first novel, The Book of Deborah, about the life of Jesus as a child and his cousin. And I was horse riding with my ex, and I just saw a tree covered in peacock butterflies. And that, and what I got was, this is to tell you a book will be published.
Ooh.
So I've sort of kept that. So when I see peacock butterflies, it's something about something, obviously hatching and flying.
Yeah.
Something going out into the wider air. And I did once, just once, I had a lady who was a minister for Unity Church. She came and stayed with us when she was going through a difficult time. And we were doing co-counselling, you know, because she's got a lot of wisdom she could help us with, and vice versa. And she said to me, how do I know that's true? And I can't remember what we were talking about. And I said, if it's true, you'll see five peacock butterflies on the buddleia in the front garden tomorrow morning. And I just thought, what the hell did you say that? But it just came out.
Yeah.
You know, I've never seen five peacock butterflies here. We'd only been there since the September, and it was now April or something like that. I don't know that any. The following morning, I came downstairs. There she was, standing in the front garden, looking at a tree with seven peacock butterflies on it. And of course, the first thing she said was, there are seven. Does that mean it's not going to happen? No, I think they just sent two more in case a bird came by. Terrain practicality. But that was a big jolt.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
You say it and it will happen.
Yeah. And when you let life flow through you, in a way that means that you can just, you know, let the spirit speak through you and say things like that. And the number of times that people getting in contact following a shamanic healing, when a particular animal, maybe their power animal or maybe, you know, simply a messenger in the work of the healing, has stepped forwards, and actually when people first meet their power animals, over and over and over again, I'll get a little message within 24 hours. You'll never guess what I bumped into, you know, in the most unlikely ways and the most extraordinary ways. And if it can be a real animal live here, it'll be a real animal live.
Yes.
But if they're power animals, you know, a 7-foot black bear or something, they'll turn on the telly, it'll be a documentary about bears. They'll go in the shop, there'll be a card with bears. They'll turn around and there's the book and it's got a bear on the front. And, you know, just, everything is speaking all of the time.
One of the things my bishop teaches is sacred magic of the angels, or theurgy as it's called, which is the way of, we talked about this before, petitioning the divine through the right channel, because an angel has a job, like Raphael is healing and Gabriel is homes and motherhood and that kind of thing. And One of the things that we're taught is that when you petition via a particular path, there are specific signs.
Uh-huh.
If you ask a particular question of a particular line to the divine, there is a list of signs that you will get within a specific length of time. And only those signs mean that the prayer is being answered. Mm-hmm. If you don't get those signs, it means no, the timing was out or the prayer is inappropriate.
Right.
And that's, I found that incredibly helpful, though people learning with me found it quite hard because they'll go, but if it's Raphael and I hear about a healing, it's got to be a good sign. No, it's got to be the specific signs, because I think in these specific theological journeying of the writing the sacred letter to the angel, it would be too easy for the ego to get involved and say, I saw a white feather, it was an angel, therefore it's yes. Has to be really, really specific. And I do know that if you get a very clear sign, then that prayer has gone through and it will be sorted for you. You may not like the way it's going to be sorted, but it will be sorted.
I don't know. This is that kind of very clear statement of it's like this, it means this.
Mm.
I mean, I have no idea what your very clear signs are, but certainly in shamanism, there are lots of, I guess, what I would think of as very similar rules, in inverted commas, to that, in that it can be very easy to go for quite prescriptive meanings on this is what a thing means. You know, if a wolf is your power animal, then you're a, you know, a howling loner or you're a pack animal or whatever. I mean, even within wolf, people can't agree.
No.
But I think I'm not saying that that's, you know,
no,
not right, but for me, certainly within the kind of relationship that shamanism has with omens and signs and all the rest of it, is that they are quite literally artisan made for the individual. And one of the glorious things about journeying is that you start to build up a kind of a lexiconography, a dictionary of metaphor between you and the spirits, and it is profoundly personal.
Yes.
So what something means to you, you know, the spirits are having a conversation with you, uniquely you, in that moment, and they know everything that's ever happened to you, every thought you've ever had, every dream you've ever dreamt, every book you've ever read, every film you've ever watched, all of it.
Yeah.
And so they know what metaphorical image is going to mean what to you. And this was so extraordinarily clearly demonstrated to me one time. It was absolutely amazing. One of the things that you can do with journeying is journey on behalf of another person. So you, the journeyer, take their question to the spirits. And once you're there, you can ask for the answer in two ways. So the first is, I want you to give me the answer through my metaphors so that I can unpick those metaphors and explain in very simple terms what the answer is. And the other way is, I want their metaphors so that I tell them the journey, and then it's up to them, and obviously I'll help them unpick, but it's up to them to interpret what that means. So a young woman came to me asking me to journey on her behalf using her metaphors around, she'd been offered a job, theoretically it should have been absolutely her dream job, but she found herself resistant to accepting it and she didn't really get why, so she wanted some clarity from the spirits. So she's sitting on the sofa and I'm lying on the ground and I've got a headscarf over my eyes and the drum is beating and off I go to the non-ordinary reality, and the very first thing I see is there's a cabin in the woods. It's got a beautiful big plate glass window, and I go into the cabin and it's, you know, this lovely wooden room, but it's completely empty except for a rocking chair in front of this plate glass window. And to me, a rocking chair is absolutely the epitome of relaxation, rest. You get to sit in a rocking chair and read a story by the fire. You know, it's where you might sit and knit or whatever. It's heaven, beautiful, lovely. And then the journey went on, and it seemed to me that it was pretty uncomfortable and rather doom-laden. But it had begun with this extraordinarily lovely image to me. You know, cabin in the woods, yum. Wooden room, yum. And so I took my bandana off thinking, whoa, this is going to be hard work to unpick this unless these are really clear for her. She was sitting on the sofa, absolutely ashen-faced, going, thank God, I asked. The single most terrifying, horrifying, awful moment of her entire life had been when she'd been asked to babysit her very much younger sister, who had climbed on the rocking chair and fallen through the plate glass window and nearly died.
Wow.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, you know, I can't tell her that a rocking chair means goody yum-yums.
No. No, absolutely. And again, you know, you've helped me clarify, because that's so helpful, because I'm a trained journalist, I'm very used to putting out précis.
Mm-hmm.
And you will always expand it, and I'll go, oh, I do agree, and even though it sounds different. Because let's, for example, the signs for the archangel, for the angel Sashiel, which is prosperity or justice, or you want something sorted out. It's a gift from the sea is one of the signs. Or purple flowers or purple grapes or something like that. So each of the angels has about 20 possible signs. But there's always, for example, the sudden blooming of a yellow flower for Raphael. Well, you have to discount that one in spring when the dandelions come up, for example.
It's not sudden.
No, but I asked, I petitioned Raphael a few weeks ago and I said, I know it's no yellow flowers. And then just within the week I walked out and there was a tall, thin yellow flower I had never seen before in my garden.
But it was
that
Mullein.
Had never, sorry?
Mullein.
Probably. I'll describe it to you later. Never in my life have I seen that plant.
Yeah.
And so I went, you rat bag. It is a yellow flower. So it is a personal sign, yes, yeah. I agree, but it's within specific ramifications, if you like.
Guidelines.
Yes, guidelines. So the gift from the sea, for once, I had to check with the bishop on this one, but I petitioned Sashiel. Again, it's a prayer to the divine via a source, to make quite sure that I'm quite clear. And somebody bought me a packet of cookies, but it had a picture of a lighthouse on the side. So I had to ring him up and say, does that actually count? And he said, well, what does a lighthouse mean to you? And I said, it brings up the Anne Lamott quotation, which is lighthouses don't run around islands looking for ships to save. They just stay in the middle and shine. And he said, well, no, that isn't a yes from you, but it's a very clear message.
From the sea.
from the sea, that is what you're doing wrong, which is why you haven't got this thing sorted.
Ooh!
So yeah. Can you see?
He's good, isn't he?
He is good. Yes. Yes, he is good. Okay, so we're on 37 minutes. I think we better stop for today.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Quick minutes.
And thank you, everybody, for listening. And thank you so much for your kind feedback. And if there is a topic you want us to discuss, ask us and we'll make a right pig's ear of it. But we'll give it a go.
Ain't that the truth? Yes, thank you so much for listening and for your appreciation, which we've been receiving lots of.
Yeah. And please, if you like it, share it.